Well, what we're about to hear is a small excerpt from what has come to be called the story of the flood, which is not a historical account detailing events of history, but rather the Hebrew people's reflection on the heart of God at a time in their life when everything in their world had gone awry. In the telling of the story, the whole earth is filled with violence and corruption. Any hint of God's intention for the creation is long gone. In fact, life is so tilted against God's purposes that God's dream for the creation can't possibly come to pass. There is only sorrow in the heart of God that humankind was ever created. And it is out of this sense of grievous error that God resolves to wipe out life from the earth. But then, suddenly, it seems kind of out of nowhere, along comes Noah. This person who, as the story goes, finds favor with God, who walks in God's way. And suddenly there is in the heart of God this sense of a new possibility for life, where before there was none. A way for life to flourish again, where none could have been imagined. Noah and his family would be preserved along with representatives of each species of animal, the seed of a new creation. Well, by the time we get to the part of the story that we're about to hear, the floodwaters have already covered the earth. There's been massive destruction. And now the waters have receded. And we hear the voice of God, "Never again. Never again will I turn against the creation." And instead, there is this unqualified resolve to be for and with the creation. The commitment that was there in the beginning is now even more intense, not because of a turn in the heart of humankind, but because of a turn in God's own heart. And what we hear is that God's covenant to never again inflict harm, regardless, is made not only to Noah and his family and to all the living creatures, but to all future generations. This is the promise that we're given, that God is committed to the continuity of the whole creation, to generations yet to come. The looming question for our time is, how committed are we? Following this reading this morning, I've asked Emily to share with us something of her own commitment and how that has arisen in her. And so through this passage from the book of Genesis, through what Emily shares with us of her own witness, and the stirrings in our own hearts, let us hear what the Spirit is saying to the church this day. Thanks, God.
A reading from Genesis chapter 9. So indeed, let us hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Then God said to Noah and to his sons with him, "As for me, I am establishing my covenant with you and your descendants after you, and with every living creature that is with you, the birds, the domestic animals, and every animal of the earth with you, as many as came out of the ark. I establish my covenant with you that never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of a flood, and never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." God said, "This is the sign that I make between you and me, and every living creature that is with you for all future generations. I have set my bow in the clouds, and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. When I bring clouds over the earth, and the bow is seen in the clouds, I will remember my covenant that is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the clouds, I will see it and remember. I will remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. God said to Noah, "This is the sign of the covenant that I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth." God's word is life.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much, Karen, for inviting me to be here in your beautiful space. It's been really a source of hope in the past few months to see community groups like yours, who we don't consider, you know, environmental organizations, who are just different groups of people in different parts of Victoria here on the Kwangan territories, who have come to see it as your responsibility as well to do something about the climate crisis. It hasn't always been like that, and that's really something that's changed in the past few months. So I grew up here in the Kwangan territories, and I started getting drawn into doing social justice in high school with the club that I was part of. And then I went to university, and I went to this climate change event in just the first month that I was a university student. And I got drawn into my campus divestment campaign, Divest UVic, which is still going on now. And we're asking the University of Victoria to stop investing in the fossil fuel industry. And doing that in university, I learned two main things. The first one was that climate change is a social justice issue. I remember in that event I went to in the first month, seeing this map of the world they projected, with on one side the countries that have contributed the most to climate change, and on the other side the countries that will be most affected by climate change, and the maps are like the inverse of each other. And that really, like, the unfairness of that really stuck with me. And I also had some really good mentors who were older university students who taught me a lot about organizing when I was doing that. And not just organizing in the sense of like planning one event or getting your message out there, but organizing in the sense of activating more people who can then go on to draw in more people until you build power exponentially to the point where you're so powerful that you become unstoppable and you actually win what you're working towards. And that's something that it's difficult to do, but I'm always trying to strive for it. So in my last year of university, I decided I'm just going to try to focus on school this year. I'm about to graduate, you know, I can't do it over after this. But a few months into that, my plans were foiled because construction started on the Trans Mountain Pipeline in Burnaby. And I was just so angry about that every day, like, more infrastructure was being built for this carbon bomb that was such a threat to my future and to Indigenous rights. And so I ran into this friend who knew a group of people that were organizing a blockade at the tanker terminal in Burnaby where construction was happening. And so I found my way into their meeting and joined them. And we planned the blockade, and that group became the group that's called Rise and Resist. That focuses on a lot of direct action work. And so that was the first time that I was moving kind of off out of my school and more into doing organizing in the community. And it was, maybe some of you remember this, but this was 2018, and there was a really intense few months happening around Trans Mountain Pipeline. In March, there were 10,000 people marching on Burnaby Mountain on March 10th, and we were sending buses of people over to Burnaby to participate in that. And I found myself in this role where I was starting to kind of rally the community and doing a bit of public speaking for the first time off of campus. And I was the point person for this march that we had on May 31st, which was the day after the government bought the Trans Mountain Pipeline, where there were 1,000 people there. And none of this was part of my plan, but I kind of just found myself doing it together with my fellow organizers, because nobody else was doing it. Like, I was kind of looking around to see, well, is anyone from an NGO going to do it? But they weren't organizing some of the things that everyone knew needed to happen. Like, we need to have a march. And so something I learned from that was that it's a lie that all we can do is vote and try to be sustainable, and then just kind of wait for more important people to fix the climate crisis. Because that's not how social change works. It's because the general public, there has to be an energy in the general public that's pushing political leaders to take action. And that means that what happens in the future is actually on us, which is really stressful, but it's also empowering to know how much power we actually have and how much power I have and how much power you all have in your ability to organize more people beyond just yourself. But since then, since 2018, a lot of things have changed here in Victoria. Since like the IPCC report came out in November, there's been this uptick in the amount of attention that people are paying to climate change. So we've seen groups form like the Student Strikers, Extinction Rebellion, Parents for Climate. It's been like a mushrooming of it that's been really exciting. And so what we need to do maybe as people that want to do more is turn the fear and the wanting to help that people we know have and direct it towards getting actual change happening. And I think that we know that small fixes aren't going to work. Like, we can't just, it's important to be more sustainable individually, but that's not actually going to fix the problem. That's more for us ourselves, I think, personally. What we need to do is to completely restructure our economy so that we're stopping relying on harmful industries and instead we're relying on livelihoods that heal the earth and that sustain people. And we need to make sure that nobody is left behind when these massive changes happen, for better or worse, because of climate change and because of things like automation. So that's the two sentences, but the short way of saying that is that we need a Green New Deal. And it's such a huge thing to ask for that I think it's quite likely the only way that we're going to get it is through a sustained mass uprising, the kind that I've never seen in my lifetime. The biggest one I've seen was Occupy Wall Street. But that maybe draws inspiration from maybe some of the movements that you have seen, some of you have seen in your lifetimes, like the movement to stop the Vietnam War or the global justice movement that led to the battle in Seattle in the 1990s. Or no, that was 2000, 1990s and 2000s. And so I think to do that, like, we don't have as much time just to be trying to change things by ourselves, individuals, but we need to move entire sections of our society at the same time. So that means schools, workplaces, unions, synagogues, mosques, and churches, because these organizations already have power. And so we need people to be pushing from within them to get their community galvanized towards working towards a just transition off of fossil fuels. And so that looks like making sure that within your institution there's justice, you know, that things like that people that work there are paid a living wage, and also that you can use whatever power your institution has to pressure the government to say things like ending, like that petition says, subsidies to the fossil fuel industry, and to invest in things like transit, public transit, renewable energy, and things like that. And also to return land to Indigenous peoples and support Indigenous sovereignty. So what this is actually looking like right now, starting last spring, there was a push for a Green New Deal for Canada that started. And in Victoria here, we hosted a town hall where we asked people to brainstorm what they think a Green New Deal should look like. Was anyone here there that day? Anyone here? Awesome. And since then, so we drew together this coalition of grassroots groups, faith groups, and unions to organize that. And we kept working to kind of take what we found at the town hall and move that forward. And then we had to go more underground for a bit because the election laws came into play and said we couldn't talk about the Green New Deal. So we said, okay. And then we turned our energy towards supporting the student strikers and mobilizing for the climate strike that happened globally on September 27th. Was anyone there that day at the climate strike? There were 20,000 people, and it completely, we did not expect that. Our goal was 5,000, and we didn't even think we could reach it. And so that shows how much power we actually have if we can just draw on that power that mobilized people to come out on that day. And so right now what we're trying to do, we have named our coalition Climate Justice Victoria. And we're trying to mobilize the power of the climate strikes to win specific goals. So instead of just saying act on climate, we're trying to name specific things that we want to achieve in the next year. And so right now, the two we're working on are trying to stop LNG because we are here in the provincial capital and we want to use that position to try to keep our fossil fuels in the ground in BC. And so that's the focus of the next climate strike. The other thing we're doing is we're going back to working on a plan for a Green New Deal for Greater Victoria. And that's going to be something we're working on fleshing out what it is over the winter, and then we're going to launch it more in a big way in the spring. And I've noticed often, I think the faith community are some of the people that really show up when there is a climate strike or a rally and things like this. And I've noticed, I'm like, yeah, I'm just really thankful for all of that's going on within the church. And I was just reading like the list of upcoming events that's going on here and hearing about the book study and things like that. And I think what I would challenge you to do is to go from just understanding the climate crisis, which I think many of you do, and just showing up yourself as an individual, to actually helping us organize and helping us reach more people. So I have a few ways to do that. And I think what I would hope is to see churches around the community becoming this like hub for social movement organizing that they have been in many social movements in the past. Like, I think in many great changes that have happened, like the civil rights movement couldn't have happened without churches on side. So my ask for you, the most urgent thing, we're having our next climate strike on November 29th, which is Black Friday. And we're going to take our message right to the Ministry of Energy, Mines, and Petroleum Resources to ask the BC government to stop LNG and to stop selling out our future. And so that's November 29th at noon, and we're meeting in Centennial Square. And I hope that anyone who's able to go, I can count on you to be there. And if you have work, maybe to go for an hour on your lunch break. Another thing is to ask you to, rather than just going yourself, to also bring someone along with you, to bring your kids who might be in school, and to bring your family, your coworkers, and maybe to reach out to the community and other faith groups around town and spread the word to them as well. The other thing is that we need volunteers to make the event go smoothly, and we have a meeting to organize volunteers that's happening this Wednesday evening at 6:30, which I realize is at the same time as the book study. But if anyone isn't going to the book study, you could come to that. It's at the First Metropolitan Church, room 200 upstairs. But if you're going to be busy, I think I'll send out a way. We have also probably going to have another volunteer huddle happen at 11 a.m. before the strike. So I can, maybe through Karen, send out when that's going to happen. But beyond just supporting the strikes, which we need, and there are going to be more strikes in the new year as well, because we're going to try to build them bigger and bigger. And the one that's going to happen sometime around April, we're hoping to be rivaling the size of the one that was happening last September. But beyond that, I think I would like to see people in churches and other community groups really using your institution's power, because you have a lot of it. Institutions like in the government respect hearing from other institutions like yours. And you already have this community of people who know each other and are used to working together and are connected to other people throughout, you know, your workplaces and schools and things like that. So another thing you could do is just organize your own initiatives here. And there are many different ways to do that, but some of the ideas I had are to organize meetings to lobby your political representatives. So to go to them directly, maybe as representatives of James Bay United, and to say, we want you to stop fossil fuel expansion and to do everything in your power to work toward a Green New Deal in your position. Another thing you could do is to support Indigenous sovereignty, because that is one of the main ways we're going to be able to get out of this crisis. And so that could look like doing fundraising, for example, for Indigenous-led frontline movements and for court cases, like the court case going right now led by Squamish Nation against the Trans Mountain Pipeline. Another thing is that I would love to see you help us to get a local Green New Deal happening. And that work is going on a bit more behind the scenes right now, but if that getting involved in that behind the scenes is something that calls to you, you can come talk to me after during the coffee and I can get you looped into that. So I think I have a few of these flyers that I'll go leave over with the petition over there. And if you have a cell phone, they have a number here that you can text to be added to our email list. This is more helpful for us than a sign-up sheet because we don't have to read your handwriting. You just go directly onto the email list. And if you don't have a cell phone, I think I'll get a sheet of paper and leave a sign-up sheet there as well. And then we can get you information about how to volunteer for the climate strike and just how to stay in the loop of Climate Justice Victoria in general. And yeah, I hope to see all of you again. Thank you very much.